friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw Countout, the premier countdown show of pro wrestling stuff here at youtube.com/ Steve and Larson, available wherever fine podcasts are. Be sure to hit that subscribe bell and notify bell next to it. And if you're on your iOS podcast app, or actually if you're on whatever podcast app you are listening to this in audio format, please leave us a rating or a review. It really helps boost the profile of the show.
Yeah.
And wherever podcast app you're listening to it. We're also available on the Patreon at patreon.com/ Steve and Larson. We have all sorts of great reward tiers there at the Patreon. Kick us some money and we'll give you something in return.
Yes.
Oh, good old-fashioned capitalism at work, Larson.
That works.
Where else are we?
Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com/ Going In Raw. That shirt is from not from Pro Wrestling
Tees. It's from the New Japan Pro Wrestling. Real.
That's actually bought at a show.
Merchandise store. I know. One of our good friendos
in Japan. I don't know if the one they have in Pro Wrestling Tees has New Japan Pro Wrestling on back. I don't know,
man. This is a great shirt, though.
Anyways, we have our own shop on Pro Wrestling Tees.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of designs. More to come eventually. We're going to do some more Going In Raw designs, yes?
Yeah, man. Let me ask you, what do you think of this one? What do you think of that?
You need to make it larger.
Oh.
Yeah, that's okay.
You like that?
What about the one you did a long time ago, the circular one?
I don't know. I probably still have that on a hard drive somewhere.
Oh, okay. I really like that one.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, well, I'll do that one. I really like this, though. I think this is cool. I think it'll go over well. Yeah. Anyways, it's something I'd wear. That's what I usually like to do.
Something I'd wear. What you got to use as your basis.
Exactly. Anyways. So, it's Raw's 25th anniversary coming up Monday.
Correct.
So they're doing a big to-do for the TV show Raw.
Yeah.
So we figured we'd do a big to-do here on Countout.
You know, these milestone events.
Mm-hmm.
It always offers a moment to pause and reflect upon the past.
Well, you know, man, people like Monday Night Raw. We like Monday Night Raw.
People also like top 10 lists.
They do. So we figured we'd put... So they're doing like a special... I think it's on the network and USA, where like they're counting down the 25 biggest...
Well, the top 25 Raw moments aired on the network. Premiered on that network last night after Raw.
I think, aren't they showing it on USA tonight after SmackDown?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't pay attention to TV very much.
Yeah, smart move on your part. But anyways, we thought we'd boil down our top 10 Monday Night Raw moments.
Yeah, that's the point of this video.
Here's the thing. There are so many of them. This is tailored towards our tastes.
And our experiences.
We left a lot out.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many great moments. But we can't deny that these 10 are the biggest for us.
Yes.
We're going to talk about during the middle of the show.
Honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions. Stuff that, you know, also was great, but we didn't mention them.
Yeah.
Number 10.
10.
The Rock's This Is Your Life segment.
Yeah, this happened on the Raw that aired September 27th, 1999.
The highest rated segment.
In the history of Raw, right?
In the history of, like, Raw.
WWE.
WWE being on TV. I'm not sure what, like, NBC, like, main events.
Oh, yeah.
Those might have done a lot of numbers.
Yeah, so at least Raw.
At least Raw was a high. It was like an 8-1.
It was really high.
It was like a huge number.
Yeah, this was in the midst, I believe, of Rock and Sock Connection, that storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Mankind, Mick Foley, trying to show some appreciation to The Rock.
Right.
Not exactly going, this thing didn't go necessarily as he had planned, or maybe it did. Didn't go over with The Rock.
Yeah.
How Foley had hoped.
This was fantastic.
But it yielded a plethora, cornucopia of comedic moments.
It was Mankind at his best, Rock at his absolute best. When Rock is improvising, back then, I mean to this day, but especially back then, nobody was better.
Yeah.
Nobody was more entertaining. Nobody was funnier. He had the comedic chops down perfectly. That's why now he's in huge Hollywood blockbuster comedies and action movies.
The highest grossing actor in Hollywood.
Yeah, right now he's that Jumanji sequel.
Man, that has made a ton of money.
Well, it's got the legs are crazy on it. That's what's been crazy. Like, it didn't open spectacularly. It opened good, but not great. But it's just held on.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of good word of mouth on
Yes.
You put The Rock and Kevin Hart and Jack Black in a movie together, you're going to get some box office gold.
Yeah.
If you have good creative behind it.
Yes, that's the thing. Good creative.
This had great creative behind it. Mankind did a This Is Your Life type. So This Is Your Life, that was like an old TV show.
Yeah, they do have like a retrospective of people's lives, bring back people from their past to talk about them.
Yeah.
And you'd have to guess, if I remember correctly. The TV show, you hear someone say something, you have to guess who it was.
It's your third grade teacher.
Yeah.
You know.
And they come out, talk some more. So yeah, it's a life retrospective.
Yeah, and it was hilarious. They brought out like a clown.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a clown. There was a girl he dated in high school, and Rock, of course, made fun of that because like she wouldn't let him go too far when it came to making out and whatnot. You know, the sex business, and so Rock, you know, made fun of her for that. I think his old PE teacher,
yeah,
came out. And then like the punchline of the gag was like, it wasn't even his birthday. It was like the next month or something that. So it was fantastic, hugely highly rated segment, and really helped put WWF over the top. WCW was still around.
Yeah. For another couple of years almost.
At this time. Yeah. When was it bought? Oh, we'll find out when it was
later
bought.
On. Later we'll on. Talk about that.
So yeah, that was, you know, it was a very special moment. It felt special in the moment. I remember watching it live.
Yes.
It was great.
It was good.
Number nine. Brian Pillman's got a gun.
This is maybe your personal favorite Raw moment of all time.
Man, this was... I wasn't watching wrestling, I don't think, at the time. Yeah, this is 96. So I hadn't even... maybe I was, because I think I'd started hanging out with you guys at that point.
Yeah, we were at least watching WCW by that point.
Okay, all right. But yeah, so Brian, the setup was this. Brian Pillman and Stone Cold Steve Austin were feuding.
Yeah, Brian Pillman was at his home in Kentucky somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Austin was trying to get into Brian Pillman's home.
Yeah.
That was the idea. Kelly was outside of Brian Pillman's home providing updates. Eventually, he too made his way inside Brian Pillman's home.
Right.
This is long before Kevin Kelly was the announcer in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Right,
exactly, yeah. But I feel like this helped prepare him a little bit for the shenanigans in New Japan. They had a cameraman inside the home. And
you see Pillman, you see his wife. Pillman's just seething,
mm-hmm.
waiting for, like, anxious about Stone Cold getting to his house.
Right, exactly.
And then there's that shot of the back door of Pillman's house where Stone Cold breaks the glass, opens up, he comes in, and Pillman produces a gun and points it at him. And it cuts, I think, to the outside of the house, and you hear a couple bangs.
Here's some gunshots.
Edgy stuff.
Yeah, that was great.
For a wrestling show.
Where was I reading? I was reading about this somewhere. About maybe it was... Oh, I think I was reading like... Maybe it was an old Observer newsletter. I forget. But the Vince got into really hot water
with
USA Network about this. Rightfully so, because... Okay, so this is 2 years after the Vince steroid trial, where... Which is widely known as the point where wrestling... kind of dropped
the facade that it was real.
Right, yeah, exactly. Publicly, because he had to say in court, you know, he had to say in court, this is fake. And so they started moving away from that. And so it's like, you know, but at the same time, it was only 2 years removed from that. So the idea that some of this, you know, and then kids might be, and there was still, so the Attitude Era was still in its nascent, you know, period.
Yeah.
It wasn't fully, you know, the...
It would be another year until the Montreal Screwjob happened.
Right. And so in the minds of I think, a lot of people, advertisers and the USA Network included, when you think back then, you think of pro wrestling, you think, oh, cool, it's all family-friendly stuff. Well, then cut to Brian Pillman with a gun in his Kentucky home and, like, screaming people and Austin breaking in and then gunshots. Man, that is dark.
Yeah.
That is super dark. So it's not surprising they got in quite a bit of trouble for that. You know, whatever. I think, I forget if like the ratings moved significantly or what.
Yeah.
But anyways, they had to tread on, they were on thin ice at that point. But they just kept on doing the Attitude Era. They had no more guns at that point.
No.
I don't believe.
Much to Steve's chagrin.
Yeah, sadly. But yeah, talk about like a freaking dark, extreme moment in the history of Raw. But still wildly entertaining when you watch it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Number eight.
Pillman, sorry. Pillman really was ahead of his time.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He was really ahead
of
his time.
He was a trailblazer.
He really was. Number eight.
Eight.
Edge and Lita's live sex show. Why is this not a number one, Larson? This should be a number one.
All right. Well,
live sex.
You should have told me that before we started.
Let me ask you something.
Oh, this happened January 9th, 2006. We got the dates in there. So people want to go back to the network and watch some of these things.
Let me ask you something.
What?
Yay or nay, actual sex happened during a live sex show. Nay, you think nay? But Edge was sporting like at least half an erection when he was standing up.
Yeah.
You don't think he got it to full and then went in there and...
No, I don't think not during the show.
You think he went in there?
No.
Ah, he didn't go in there. Oh, man. So anyways, the setup for this was Edge had won the WWE Championship.
From John Cena at New Year's Revolution.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And cashed in for the first time ever the Money in the Bank briefcase to claim the title. And to celebrate his title win, he and Lita were going to have a live sex celebration to close out Raw.
Here's what I love about the general idea of this, is that I'm pretty sure right after he won the title, like leaving the arena, the WWE had like a cameraman and an announcer and an interviewer guy. And he said, Edge, what are you going to do now? And he said, I'm going to have live sex. And it was like, that was either on the pay-per-view or it was on like, maybe there was a Raw between the pay-per-view and this. I forget. But he said he announced in advance like that he's going to have live sex on air. So I love that he thought this out in advance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if I ever win the championship, I'm going to have live sex. And so, yeah, sure enough, and I'm pretty sure this is a really, really highly rated segment too.
I'm sure. New Year's Revolution was the day before this.
Raw
right after that.
I'm almost positive. Maybe it was when he showed up. I forget.
Maybe they opened the show or something like that.
Maybe. But anyways.
So anyways, there's a bed in the middle of the ring. Probably a full-size bed.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't like a queen or anything.
No, no.
Yeah.
But there's enough space for them to move around a little bit, so no one's going to fall out. It's more of a twin bed where someone
right,
fall
exactly,
out
yeah.
and turn over.
Yeah.
Anyways, they go in their underwear, pretty much, I believe, right?
Yeah. Well, they did like this. I did a really brilliant breakdown of this on one of our episodes.
Earlier countouts, probably.
What was that countout?
Oh, there could be a lot of... We've talked about it extensively.
Yeah. Why is it? How is it not? Let's see here.
But you did do a breakdown of it. I remember that.
Flair Raw. Was it that?
No, that was the one. That was the Raw the following week.
Okay. Yeah. Where he said, I'm going to have her finish me off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Is it WTF Wrestling Moments? Oh, I bet it is. Oh, here
there it
is. Nice. Okay. I won't go through this entire thing. So first Edge drops a heel promo. Then they do some porno-y music. Then they completely, like, they kind of strip. So Edge takes off his socks and shoes. He takes off Lita's boots. Edge takes off Lita's top. She probably has a bra on. Lita takes off Edge's jacket and then his top. He takes off her skirt, the pants, and his belt. And he's got on, like, these boxer briefs.
Yeah.
And he's sporting, like, half a bone.
Yeah.
And Edge has no ass whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Hey, I have a note here that says Edge's dingus' face is firmly placed against Lita's butt crack. So, yeah, he started, like, grinding against her a little bit. They go under the covers. Her bra comes out. The live version of this, like, it's hard to wrangle the covers to cover everything, but a boob showed up.
Yeah.
And, like, a little bit of areola or nipple showed up. And then the implication is Edge went down on Lita. Oh, took off Lita's undies with his mouth.
Yeah.
And then, like, she went down, so it looked like she might have been. So anyways, this is hilarious.
And then Ric Flair comes out to interrupt everything.
Yeah, Ric Flair comes out. His head is already bandaged. Flair says Edge has proven that he's awful in bed. Flair then offers to have the sex with Lita, which is kind of rude. He starts doing a weird Flair sex dance. He does some air humping, maybe showing off his bona fides, is what I'm thinking. He's like, woo, I can do this better than him. Watch me. And he starts doing that. Let's see here. And then him and Edge get into a fight.
They have a match the following week, a TLC match for Edge's WWE title. It was a really good match.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. And Cena comes out, too.
Of course, Cena comes out.
Of course.
Of course, he comes out.
He always finds to lull Cena wins.
Yeah. He does. But anyways, yeah, this is a huge moment in the history of Raw and one of my favorites. And it was so bizarre.
It is bizarre.
It's so bizarre. Number seven. The Yes Movement occupies Raw.
So this is in the midst of the Daniel Bryan, will he main event WrestleMania storyline.
Ascent to WrestleMania.
After he lost to Bray Wyatt at the Rumble that year, didn't show up in the Royal Rumble match. This was the year the Batista re-signed with WWE and they were planning for him to main event Mania against Randy Orton, who was the then WWE champion.
Right.
But, of course, there was a popular uprising in the WWE Universe. We all wanted to see Daniel Bryan. He was the most over guy in the entire company.
Big time.
We wanted to see him in the main event of WrestleMania. And so WWE kind of harnessed that energy for storyline purposes and had Daniel Bryan occupy Raw. So he went to the ring invited a bunch of other fans to the ring, all dressed in Daniel Bryan shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Dozens of them,
mm-hmm.
filling the ring and the whole ringside area, and said, "We're not leaving until you listen to us. Yep. You listen to them, to the WWE Universe." So out comes Triple H and Stephanie, and Daniel Bryan says, "I want you, Hunter. I want you at WrestleMania." You know, alluding to all to you know the rumors going on that they were holding him down,
mm-hmm.
calling him a B plus player. Well, they did it on air.
Yeah,
and said, "I want to face you at Mania." And Triple H says, "You got it." And then Daniel Bryan says, "One more thing. If I beat you, I want to be in the main event." And there's that shot of Triple H losing his mind.
Yeah.
"You own it. You got it." Screaming at him, I think, while Stephanie's trying to hold him back or wrestling
right.
him like that.
Yeah.
And Stephanie's like, "No, don't give him that. Don't give him that."
Yeah.
But he did. And that, and then, you know.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about Triple H. He's up there on the top of that ramp. And he sees, how many people do you think were involved in the Occupy movement?
75 maybe.
Yeah. Okay. 75. So he sees 75 potential pedigrees. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to pedigree each and every one of those people. And he was so he had such a fever rush, a pedigree fever rush going on that he couldn't contain himself. He's willing to give Daniel Bryan everything. And he was not allowed to pedigree 75 people
because
he would have done that.
Yeah, probably. The only problem is there wasn't room in the ring to pedigree, like physically.
Oh, none of that would have mattered. He would have found a way.
Yeah.
He said, "You first, come on, pedigree."
He would have stacked three or four next, people on top of each other in the pedigree.
Triple pedigree, quadruple pedigree.
Yeah.
He had gone for a record, most pedigrees in one sitting.
Okay.
That's what he was looking to get.
What's the record? Are you aware?
Oh, I don't know.
Can't be much more.
More than like five, right? I don't see it. It's not like stunners. Stunners are like...
I know stunners you can dole out quickly.
Yeah, but pedigrees.
You can't do that with pedigree. There's a lot more setup.
Kick. Head and underneath crotch area.
Double underhook.
Another arm.
Fall.
Fall.
Get back up.
Get back up. Repeat.
Yeah.
Stunners is kick, stun, get up.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, this is a really... every once in a while, they get an inspired image to show you on the TV.
Yeah.
And this was one of those. Just a true representation of Daniel Bryan's ascent. It was all organic. It was all grassroots. It was
there
all fan-based.
There were two monumental Daniel Bryan moments that happened leading up to WrestleMania 30. There was this one, and then in the cage match, when he turned against the Wyatt family after he joined.
That was great.
And he did that while concussed. He got concussion during that match. And I still remember the image of him perched on the top of the cage doing the yes chant.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. It's rare. I mean, you know, we get the concept of the blow-off match. And I always felt that Bray Wyatt thing had more juice in it before they did that. But, you know, sometimes it's better to strike while it's hot as opposed to just, you know, take the risk and wait until it's dying down.
Yeah.
Number six.
Six.
Stone Cold Steve Austin's beer truck.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. This happened on March
22nd, 19.
You got it.
99.
Mm-hmm.
Closed out Raw. You had the corporation or the corporate ministry at that point.
I think it was the corporate ministry.
We didn't write any notes for any of these.
No, we didn't write any notes for this.
Anyways, no. Austin rolls into the arena with the beer truck
and
then proceeds to spray down everybody in the ring with beer.
Yeah. This was, okay, so this is like Stone Cold at maybe his ultimate peak.
It looks like it was just the corporation.
Looks like it was, yeah, The Rock was champion. Okay.
This is all in the lead up to WrestleMania. It must have been 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds right. Nobody was hotter than Stone Cold.
No.
Nobody. And this was one of those things where, I mean, and I don't know if, was Russo still around at this point?
Yeah, it was until October that year he left, I believe.
Oh, look at you. Nice. This was the kind of writing that Vince Russo probably deserves a lot of credit for. When he talked about the whole idea of Smash Mouth, what do you call it? Smash TV?
Smash TV. Yeah.
Smash Mouth. Smash TV, where every week they would really be trying to bring viewers over with these really iconic moments. And Stone Cold was the perfect vehicle for this stuff. You had like the thing with Austin and McMahon in the hospital, and McMahon for that matter. I mean, it was a great duo. You know, the hospital bit, you had this beer truck, you had the one where he had the gun up to his, where he had the gun up to his head and just said bang, and then Vince peed himself.
Yeah.
You had all these iconic moments, and it was just like, what can we do this week to top last week? Well, this was huge.
He drove
a, what was it? Was this a Zamboni?
No,
that's different.
That was a different thing.
That was where
he drove the Zamboni and jumped off and
started. That was awesome.
This is where he just drove the beer truck
in
and sprayed everybody with a beer.
Right, yeah. And it was great. It was so much beer, and they're all just slipping around. Of course, Vince was just giving it
His all, yeah. He had like
way too much. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
Slipping and falling.
Yeah. But this was an absolute iconic moment for Steve Austin's reign at the top. And of course, The Rock was there. Okay, we're going to pause and do some honorable mentions. These are items that did not make the list, but they could be in the list.
Yeah, yeah.
Who could forget Triple H's return from his quad tear?
Yeah, this was at Madison Square Garden. I always remember this, watching this, because I was confused as to why he was wearing a denim vest over a leather jacket. It seemed like it was a bit too much.
It was really, really hot. It was like super cheesy, but then it looked really cool.
No, I agree. He looked tough, but it seemed like it was too much.
It's my fascination with the Hesher.
Yeah, you want to be a metalhead.
Yeah, and metalheads, sometimes they wear denim vests.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, Triple H is the ultimate Hesher. Mm-hmm. I mean, as it pertains to pro wrestling, you have to say.
Yeah, he's a metalhead.
He's definitely a Hesher. And so I forgot they had that cheesy movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, yeah.
Who seems like that guy can't be a metalhead.
Yeah, probably not.
No, he's not really a metalhead. He can doll up and look like Bruce Willis, but he's not a metalhead. But anyways, the huge ovation. This is one of those moments where they had to drop the heel thing.
Yeah.
Because people appreciated him so much, and especially in the wake of that match, which is one of the best matches ever on Raw. I mean, that could be in here.
Yeah.
Him and Stone Cold, the two-man power trip versus Benoit and Jericho, mm-hmm. where they dropped the titles to Benoit and Jericho, and Triple H leading up to the finish of the match tore his quad, like completely off the bone or whatever, and still managed to finish the match, I think in like a Lion Tamer, right? Or Walls of Jericho?
I think he was in it at some point,
that
kind of felt good.
And so everybody just appreciated that. It was also one of the first times, I think, where they were exposing the rehab process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would show him going to surgery when that happened. And then, you know, they do kind of video updates here and there. And when he came back, he was jacked.
Yeah, he was. He was huge.
Jacked. So that was a huge moment. DX invades Nitro. Didn't make the list. It could have. Easily could have.
Very iconic.
Super iconic moment.
They had a tank. They were riding around. I forget what city it was, but they just went to the arena the Nitro was in a tank.
Yeah.
Anytime you put a tank in a WWE segment, I'm all in.
Yeah.
See Rusev's entrance to WrestleMania 30.
Mm-hmm. It was huge. It was great.
Massive.
Exactly. Triple H again.
A lot of Triple H in these.
A lot of Triple H. Bullying the ref back into giving him his title back when he lost it to Jericho.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Iconic moment.
And then another iconic moment when Raw debuted.
First Raw. Pretty iconic because show's still around. Longest running weekly televised television series in the history of television.
Exactly. Number five.
Five.
Trish and Lita main event Raw. First time the women's division main evented Raw.
It happened December 6th, 2004.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trish was the women's champion. This is a match where Lita just about killed herself doing the suicide dive and landing pretty much right in her head.
Correct.
But in the end, Lita captured the win and the gold.
Yeah, and apparently, according to some sources, I forget who, I think Sasha said this, they still play this match.
In NXT, right?
In NXT for like the newbies. You know, they say, hey. I wonder, I don't know if that's changed since then, because obviously this sort of laid the groundwork 10 years later, 11, 12 years later, for Charlotte and Sasha Banks to main event several Raws
and a
pay-per-view and, you know, a Hell in a Cell. And so, you know, a bunch of great iconic moments there. I remember there was an I Quit match, submission match? What was it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Falls Count Anywhere?
It was in Falls Count Anywhere where Sasha put Charlotte in the bank statement through the rail.
Oh, I love that. That was so creative.
Yeah, that was great.
It was a very creative moment. So, but this kind of, you know, people, even during the lead up to that feud, they would look back on this and say, hey, this is when it started.
Yeah.
And now we're able to pick up that thread 10 years later.
Yeah.
Number four. CM Punk's pipe bomb. My favorite promo of all time. I still watch this from time to time.
Yeah.
I love it so much. I miss CM Punk. Please come back.
This is probably the wrestling segment that got me back into wrestling after kind of being a lapsed fan for a while.
Sure.
Well, it's partially... Was it WrestleMania 27? I watched that. The one that was Miz versus Cena in the main event.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Which you think, if I'd been a lapsed fan for a while and watched that again, I'd probably just go back to being a lapsed fan.
I know, yeah, exactly.
But then it was
this crap.
This pipe bomb, I think you told me, he's like, hey, did you see CM Punk's promo on Raw? I was like, no.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched it, and I'm like, oh, that's good stuff.
That's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. He dropped this kind of on John Cena, but also just kind of on the company in general.
Yeah.
It was well known that his contract was coming up. They incorporated that into storyline. Apparently, he signed his contract at Money in the Bank 2011, which is where this was leading to.
It was
funny because it kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I was always aware of CM Punk. I always knew that he had a rep for being, like, you know, the guy that people who liked the kind of wrestling I liked.
Yeah.
And but then, like, when I started tuning in again, like, it was not long before this. I mean, he was like the leader of the new Nexus, and then he was doing commentary because he had been injured. But then when he delivered this pipe bomb, I was like, oh crap, this guy is like the best ever.
Yeah.
Best thing I've ever seen. So yeah, he's great. Wish he'd come back.
The one kind of thing they dropped the ball on in this whole storyline with Cena is they really should have let CM Punk defend the WWE title elsewhere.
It would have been great. Awesome. He takes that to PWG.
Oh my gosh. Ring of Honor.
Give me a break.
New Japan.
It would have been amazing.
Give him 2 months to start defending the title at like little independent shows.
I know.
They've been outstanding.
High school gymnasiums. Yep. Can you imagine? I mean, that takes some balls.
I know.
That would have been fantastic, though. Number three. Mick Foley wins the WWF title January 4th, 1999. This was like an overbooked mess of a match. But
it was tons of fun.
That episode of Raw was fantastic. And I forget what preceded it, but Foley had a beef. He came out. He threatened to rip Shane McMahon's arm off if Vince didn't give him the title shot that he'd earned and deserved.
Yeah.
And so Vince set it up for the end of the night, a no DQ match.
Yeah.
Which, of course, led to everybody in the company getting
stone
involved.
Stone Cold out there. You had DX out there.
Mm-hmm.
And this went head-to-head with an episode of Nitro, which featured the finger poke of Doom.
Oh, God, that's right.
And then you had Shivani spoiling the end of this match, the end of that Raw, during the broadcast.
Which caused, I think, 500,000 people
to turn to see Foley win the title.
To change the channel! What are you doing, Eric Bischoff?
I know.
Oh, man. You know, you win some, you lose some. But the match is, yes. Is it overbooked? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Is it very, it's the most Attitude Era match there is. Oh, another thing we could have put on here, the Corporate Rumble.
I thought about that,
too. Yeah, that was a great one. That put that, the Corporate Rumble in our honorable mentions. Yes, it is overbooked. It is one of the most Attitude Era matches you'd get. But it is so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
It is so much fun. It doesn't matter that Mick Foley basically had that title won for him by Stone Cold and DX. It was just a blast. And at the end, DX holds him high, holding that title. And everybody understanding who Mick Foley is, where he's coming from, what he's done in his career, just reveled in the fact that, whoa, the WWF is. Because you look at the title as a reward for hard work, you know, oftentimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially back then. Because if you look at a lot of the guys, you know, Stone Cold had paid his dues. Undertaker, been around forever. I mean, Kane, I don't know how much people really knew about Kane's.
I know.
His history before then in
regional promotions, right, plus
exactly.
As fake Diesel.
Right, right. But, you know, Triple H, I think people are probably kind of aware of the fact that he had to pay his dues via that punishment.
Well, even before that, in his time in WCW.
Right, exactly.
Terrorizing.
But Mick Foley is a guy who everybody knew. This guy really paid his dues.
Yep.
A hardcore legend. He had been all over the world, as they like to say.
Yeah.
And he really absolutely deserved it. People were huge into this.
And this whole feud between Foley and The Rock was good.
Oh, it was fantastic.
A lot of great stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Empty so arena match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I quit match with 11 chair shots to the head. Unprotected chair shots.
Yeah, that was a bit much.
Yeah, man.
The empty arena match. Yeah.
So bad, man. That's like the... I think you feel about that way, the way I feel about the House of Horrors.
Oh, so bad it's good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Number two. Chris Jericho debuts. So before, this happened on August 9th, 1999. Before he actually made his iconic debut, they had the countdown to the millennium.
Yeah.
And most people kind of figured it was Chris Jericho. If you line up his contract, you know, people kind of knew, okay, well, he's not in WCW anymore.
Yeah.
The internet nerds kind of knew.
There was months they were doing these countdowns.
Right, exactly. So you got to figure, well, there's a no-compete clause there, so he's not going to be allowed to show up on TV. And so, but when it actually happened, it was smack dab in the middle of The Rock's promo. I know everybody who's watching has probably seen it. If you haven't, go back and watch it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Smack dab in the middle of The Rock's promo. And the big countdown thing comes up,
yep.
And then the iconic Walls of Jericho music starts.
And then his name flips over in his early Titantron. The crowd lost
their
mind.
The crowd lost their mind. It was amazing.
Oh, I just get goosebumps.
I know, me too. I know. It was like
watching
the best.
It live. I know.
Watching it live in his name in all its glory.
I know.
And it was just cool. Like, the entire packaging was just cool. And then the camera cuts, and his back is towards the rock, and he's doing the Jesus pose. And then he turns around, and the crowd is going nuts.
Yep.
He looks like a million bucks. Every time somebody jumped from WCW to WWE, they just looked cooler.
I know.
They just made them look kind of cooler. The lighting was, like, a little darker and more stylistic, but cooler. It just looked a little grittier.
Yeah.
Everything was cooler. But it also felt more expensive.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't wrap my head around that one. I mean, because WCW always had a way of making things look overproduced yet really cheap.
Right. Exactly.
And
yeah.
WWE had a tendency to do the inverse.
Yeah, exactly. So, man, it was just... And then he dropped a promo talking about how he's here to save the WWF and this and that. And then The Rock and him had a back and forth. And it's just to immediately put a guy up there. And granted... In the end, his career, obviously, and his career is still going strong, as we see in New Japan.
Yeah.
At the first year or so wasn't the best in terms of how they booked him.
Yeah.
Eventually, they came around, you know, to it correctly, and he had some, you know, an iconic feud with
Shawn Michaels.
I thought he did some really good work with China.
Yeah.
And you know, he's had
his feud with Triple H and pretty much
he's had great feuds. But that debut, I mean, to this day, I think there can't be much, you know, debate.
That's
who had
the
greatest debut ever.
I'm looking over our list here. I'm going to do a quick aside here. There's four entries on this list, four of the 10 from 1999.
I was just thinking that too. When I said 1999, I was like, oh man. Yeah. 1999 was a great year for wrestling.
Stellar year for wrestling.
It was a stellar year.
Or at least for WWF.
Yeah.
I don't know what Nitro or WCW was doing back then.
Hold on a second. I wanted to look. Nitro, what year? What was August 9th?
1999. Let's see what was on the WCW Nitro.
Let's see what was on there. Here we go. Perfect. August 9th.
Let's see what the card was.
Okay, so it kicked off with Vampiro and the Insane Clown Posse beating Norman Smiley, Prince Iaukea, and Lash LaRue.
This is before Russo came over to WCW.
Yeah.
He had another 2 months in WWF.
Kurt Hennig and Barry Windham defeated Public Enemy. Mona defeated Little Genie. Chris Benoit defeated U.S. champion David Flair. No wonder Chris Benoit wanted to get out of there. Let's see here. There was a backstage segment.
It was the main event.
The main event, yeah, just get to that. Hulk Hogan, Bill Goldberg, and Sting defeated Kevin Nash, Sid, and Rick Steiner at 8 minutes and 8 seconds when referee Scott Dickerson ran out, took over officiating duties after the initial ref was knocked out, and stopped the match as Sting had Nash in the Scorpion Deathlock moments after Hogan hit Sid and Nash with a steel chair.
That's all confusing.
This was Hogan's return to the red and yellow.
That's weird.
Wow. Terrible. Around this, I don't know what time Jericho came out, but the middle of the card saw Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio beating Dave Taylor and Chris Adams, Billy Kidman beating Disco Inferno via disqualification, and then Buff Bagwell defeating Scott Norton via disqualification. So that's what they were up against.
Oh, wow.
Little wonder they went under.
Yeah, not much competition at that point.
Nope.
Nope.
Like you said, 1999 was a great year for WWF. All right, here we go. Number one moment.
Number one.
WWF Raw. Monday Night Raw history. Number one.
Number one.
Shane O'Mac buys WCW. I will never forget, how stunned, how floored I was. We would always look up, because we got the West Coast feed, obviously. We were living in LA at the time. We hopped on internet on WWF just to see, what can we look forward to tonight for Nitro? And they showed in their little banner image or their header image, whatever, the split screen
of Vince and Shane.
And I don't think so. I remember watching WCW the week before and them announcing that Bischoff and some group of investors were on the verge of buying the company, and they were going to do their Night of Champions. They were going to have like an impromptu Night of Champions where all the titles would be on the line.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had no idea that WWF was buying WCW.
Yeah.
And to see that it was like the biggest shocker.
Yeah.
The absolute biggest mind blower.
Well, I mean, we saw right there on our televisions live.
Yeah.
The definitive winner of the Monday Night War.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we saw it play out there where, you know, we know behind the scenes WWF did buy WCW to see it incorporated in storyline where Vince would come out and announce, you know, that he defeated his rival.
Mm-hmm.
And then have Shane say, well, nope, I bought the company.
Yeah.
This is mine now, Dad.
To incorporate that so effectively into storyline, so quickly, so effectively, to give us that iconic split screen moment, to coordinate that in the first place, mm-hmm. is just absolute inspiration. Just complete inspiration. No press release, no hemming and hawing.
Nope.
Granted, the invasion angle wasn't really what it should have been.
No.
But that moment in time was, in our view...
Oh, the greatest in Raw history.
The greatest, most iconic moment in Raw history. Can't beat that.
Nope.
So, yeah. Anyways. And then, of course, you know, another huge moment. Should be number one. They brought back the curb stomp.
True.
That just happened.
They put together a Balor Club. Bullet Club reunion in WWE.
Real.
Anyways. No, I think our list is real.
I think our list is absolutely real. Anyways, that's it. Let us know what your most iconic. Look, there's a million that we missed. There's a million out there.
Yeah.
That aren't on this list. Let us know. Let the comment section not be lambasting us.
Just suggesting your own, and maybe
just let us know what your most personal iconic.
You'll bring up something that we forgot or haven't seen.
Exactly.
And we'll check it out.
Exactly.
If you got something you really like, put what it is. What date it happened,
mm-hmm.
maybe we'll go back and check it out.
I was going to say when Sable had the hands on.
That was at a pay-per-view.
But that was at a pay-per-view.
When she powerbombed Mark Merrow for the first time, that might have been on Raw.
Maybe. Pretty cool moment.
Yeah.
Probably in 1990. Well, it was probably 98. But anyways, yeah. Anyways, that's it for now. Thanks for watching. Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.